Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I heard this thing on the radio with Sarah Pascoe, who I know you like because you've got Sarah Pascoe's book, Comedian.
She was
talking about when she went for an interview to do philosophy at Cambridge, and she had to go and visit this old professor in his rooms, and he was a real one of these old-fashioned dons, and his room was absolutely full of books.
It looked about like the opposite of Jeremy Corbyn's room.
Correct, because he's never read a book, as we know. But yeah, the room was absolutely full of books. And she went in there and said to her, "Oh, my room's like this, except with me it's clothes."
That's brilliant.
It's rather good, isn't it?
I can't remember whether that was in her book or not, because she did talk about her Cambridge interview in a book. She didn't get a place.
No, she didn't, that's right. And a couple of other jokes, just to check the level. Maybe another joke here.
I like to laugh.
Yeah, we all like to laugh. I went to Waterstones and I asked the woman for a book about turtles. She said hardback, and I said, yeah, and little heads.
I think I quite like that, actually.
Good. Well, you're obviously in the mood to laugh. I thought I'd start with Love Island, because we talk about Love Island a lot.
It's not Love Island season. It's like the off-season, you know, people who talk about golf and stuff or football. They have the off-season. We're in the off-season of Love Island.
We are, but we talk about Love Island a lot, and you clearly enjoy the show. But I just wondered if you felt, in a way, just a little bit guilty when you know...
I think definitely. I think it would be impossible to be a fan... Because I am a big fan of the show, and I think it's a... it's unbelievable how popular it got. And I think it's a great study of human interaction and stuff. But also, and it's just like a lot of fun to watch, but...
But do you feel guilty in having that fun? Because I was just, some of the stories said, what happens to these contestants who go into Love Island? We've had two suicides now.
Yeah, within the last 9 months.
And it says that the TV company chews them up and spits them out for our entertainment.
Yeah. Some of the contestants on here have got really good like support systems. Like people like Danny Dyer. She's clearly got a strong family unit. She's still with the guy that she was with before. Like, some of them clearly have the network to be able to deal with it. Some of them really don't. Like Mike Fats or whatever.
Thalassitis.
And it was Sophie from season two as well who committed suicide. And clearly, like, they needed extra support because being in the public eye so much and then just being... Like, what? He was clearly, like, had a persona on TV shows that was very different from what he was actually like, which must be exhausting to try and keep up with, and also you must get a lot of backlash about it.
He's Mike Thalassitis. I mean, do you remember him from the show?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And what was he like on the show?
He was a bit of a Lothario on the show, or at least that's the way that the producers chose to present him. And he had the nickname Muggy Mike and whatever, which is obviously like some news stories have reported it. It's like Muggy Mike takes his own life, whatever. Like, I think it's completely inappropriate to use the nickname Muggy Mike now. And so, yeah, I've been a bit of a...
Was he
a
very
like a
popular
playboy.
Was he a popular contestant?
Everyone liked him and stuff.
Yeah.
I think people like loved to hate him when he was on the show. But then the other people who knew him, he was on First Dates then. I don't watch First Dates, but there was a guy called Sam Thompson who was from Made in Chelsea who knew him from First Dates and stuff, and said that he was like the exact opposite of how you would imagine him to be. And so I think the producers of the show have done him a real disservice of presenting him as this like Playboy Lothario character of being arrogant and cocky and stuff, because I think that he actually, well, clearly isn't.
But
that
they're doing that for you, your entertainment and enjoyment. So in a way, everybody who watched it is complicit in what's going on with it, because we had two suicides now. You would have thought after the first suicide they would have given some thought either to the editing of the programme or the way they present these people on
the
show.
Like the character, Sophie, I don't want to call them characters because obviously they're real people, but the way they're presented on, I think that's one of the problems, is that they're characters on TV shows, but they're actually real people, and not being able to separate your public persona from who you actually are is, I think, one of the real big problems with this. And it, like, you can see that. So these two people have committed suicide from Love Island, but so like Heath Ledger, he committed suicide, and a lot of people peg that down to him not being able to separate the character of the Joker from himself. And yeah, and I think there is, you see them as characters, and that's what's horrible and stuff. But I think that,
but you're going to carry on watching Love Island.
Well, probably. But then I think that surely the responsibility of how you present these people and the support they get after the show and teaching them how to deal with being in the public eye, surely the producers and the people who work on the show are more responsible than the audience.
I think it's the suddenness of it, isn't it? It's just your throat. And it's also the fact that it's not a career. I'm just thinking about Hollywood. Not so much Hollywood now, but Hollywood in the 30s and 40s, where you would get some person like Norma Jean, who's manufactured into Marilyn Monroe, and at least gets the time. I mean, she had such a sort of troubled upbringing that probably the seeds for her suicide were probably there, you know, long before she was even famous. But, you know,
well, like the Heath Ledger thing, he never, a lot of people talk about how he never went to like acting school or anything, and that was one of the reasons why he couldn't separate his characters from himself, because he was never trained or anything. And it's the same with these people, is they're never trained to be in the public eye. And I think that was, but the, you point can say that with like royals as well.
Yes, well, royals are trained.
No, they're trained, but like Diana wasn't in the way that she should have been, and she was really troubled and stuff. I mean,
well, Diana was sort of cut adrift from the royal thing. You are, as part of the royals, you've got a support network, a huge support network. It's just that she either cut herself off or was cut off from that.
They isolated her.
That was the problem with Diana. And Diana, don't forget, didn't commit suicide.
No, I know. Well, people don't just crash in tunnels. They don't just crash in tunnels.
Well, now this brings me, it's interesting, it brings us on to the second thing. You're saying you're subscribing to all the conspiracy theories about Princess
100%.
Diana. 100%. Right.
There's no right. There Why? Is people don't just crash in tunnels.
Yes, but if the driver who's had a bit too much to drink and they've been pursued by the paparazzi, they probably do. But we don't know. I just wonder why you young people these days are so keen on conspiracy theories.
This is not young. It's not just young people who are keen on conspiracy theories. Everyone for the history of the world has been keen on conspiracy theories. People love to make up stuff about the moon landings. That's not just young people.
No. Well, it wouldn't be. No, it's 69. The, exactly, the moon landings. We know the moon landings were faked. So we don't need to worry about that.
Or, like people make up conspiracy theories about like Tutankhamun and stuff. Like, that's the cities of gold. That's old stories from the,
Victorian times. People, assassination of President Kennedy, people make up.
There's another one that was conveniently killed.
Although I've seen all the documentaries about President Kennedy, and it was Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone.
Okay, so I think that President Kennedy genuinely was just shot by Lee Harvey Oswald, that's fine. Princess Diana, I'm not so sure. And then the moon landings. I think they did land on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot we don't know about space, about NASA and space agencies, that they're just keeping secret from us.
Mm. Now, the reason I raise conspiracy theories is there were various outlandish theories about Madeleine McCann, most of which involve the parents and their friends, the Tapas Seven or whatever they call them, being involved in the tragedy.
Yeah.
And there's an 8-part series on...
I've watched a little bit of the episodes, of all the episodes, but I can't watch the whole 8 episodes. It's ridiculous, too long.
It is ridiculous. And according to the guy from the Sunday Times who covered it at the time and wrote a big piece...
Covered when she was disappeared at the time.
Covered when she disappeared, right. And the aftermath, and wrote a big piece in the Sunday Times magazine. Mm-hmm. It's absolute nonsense.
Oh yeah, it is. It's just recycled.
There's no evidence, no new evidence whatsoever. There's absolutely nothing new in this documentary. 8 episodes, as you said, nothing new in it. Jerry and Kate McCann are not in it. They declined to participate in it.
Yeah, no wonder.
Their friends from the holiday, the so-called Tapas 7, none of them contributed to the programme.
There's no
at all.
One who could genuinely shed any light on anything. It's no. Just these like pseudo-experts, really.
Yeah, a prominent role is given to Goncalo Amaral, who was the head of the investigation, who sort of convinced himself at a very early stage that the couple were guilty.
Yeah, well, that was probably one of the reasons they didn't find her and probably will never find her.
Your friends at school all think, almost without exception, you were telling me, that the McCanns did it.
That they drugged. They accidentally drugged her in. It's just unbelievable. Like, I just don't think that they did it, because I don't think you could act that well for that long.
No. You couldn't keep up the pretense.
But I don't like all the Twitter threads and all the people on Twitter like saying that it's just because it's like they're there. They're like, imagine how that would feel.
Yeah.
And for the children, if everyone was accusing your parents of being murderers and kidnappers and
But your
be
friends
their
in
children.
School are quite happy to contribute to the Twitter threads, etc.
Well, yeah, but...
Did you have someone who got, like, 9,000 likes or something?
Oh, yeah, there was someone, this is not like a friend, but like someone at my school, and they got, like, tons and tons of... like retweets and stuff
for
a theory, but like hers was not a particularly bad one, because it genuinely was just like based on what the TV show had said and like a theory and stuff. The worst ones are ones where it's just them calling the McCanns names with no.
I can't see that's one thing
discussion.
I can't understand why the McCanns get so much.
Well, I think that it's a little bit because they're like educated,
I think it
middle
is.
Class. Like, I think it's a lot of that, and because that they've kept it in the public eye for so long, and people blame them for using taxpayers' money and stuff. But you have to put yourself in their shoes, and like, so people say, "Oh, it's too much." Like, you wouldn't write a book about it, you wouldn't do this. But like, that's their entire life. If your child's been kidnapped, how would you possibly be able to think about anything else? And like, I've read her book.
Have you really?
Yeah, I read it on holiday, like absolutely ages ago.
Ideal holiday reading.
I think I was in Portugal at the time. You know. I think it might have been a holiday when we went to that villa in Portugal when I was way too young to be reading the McCann's biography. I just,
so you
but then
that
you
book
would...
on holiday in Portugal is a bit like, you know, on planes, they never put on Snakes on a Plane or any of those movies. They never show those on airplanes for a reason.
But I think that, like, if I was her, I would use... And so one of the Tapas Seven's, like, cousin was an MP or something, so they really used all their links and stuff. But you would, like, you'd do whatever it took... whatever you thought that was going to help.
You mentioned hate mail, and...
Yeah, I know, when you said you've got something through the post, I was going to say, more hate mail.
Yes, you mentioned hate mail. This actually did come through the post to Talk Radio.
It's so mean.
I recently heard you read out a letter from Mr. and Mrs. Belling on your late night programme. I thought they
That was, for anyone who doesn't know, that was my hate mail from last week.
Hate mail from last week, saying you were supercilious and...
Whining,
yes. And we did actually look up the thesaurus to find different meanings of supercilious. Hoity-toity was the one that I really liked. So you're hoity-toity, and they agreed that you're a bit hoity-toity.
It's so harsh.
And then this is...
This one's worse.
You think this one's worse?
Well, the other one was, like, outwardly just, like, mean. But you can kind of be like, well, they're just, you know, they're not that nice and stuff. This one's... The grammar is excellent.
It's beautifully written.
And it's fantastically written. It's well-headed. They clearly have written a letter before. They've signed it. Signature signed this one.
Yes, they have. It's, and the full address in here as well.
Full address in it. There's it's all well paragraphed.
It is. And they say that I'm giving you...
This is the worst bit.
This is what you didn't like. They pay tribute to me for giving your daughter the experience and exposure, and I'm sure it will
help. That sounds like I'm one of those celebrities who does, like, detox tea adverts on Instagram.
Maybe you could
do that. Maybe one day.
Maybe one day. I'm sure it will help her university applications and future career. So listen, Carl. This is Carl Swan.
You can't, if it's bad stuff, you can't give their full name.
Well, yeah,
because then they might have people with pitchforks go around to their house.
Your fans?
Yeah.
Your fan base. The pitchforks. What have you been watching?
The Simpsons.
Oh, right, The Simpsons, of course. Well, on my overnight show, I not only gave his name out, I gave his full address out by mistake.
Did you actually?
Yeah, by mistake.
That's so bad. No, but it's not on. I would not talk about this on my... To be honest, here's a secret for you all. Quite embarrassed about it. Don't really talk about it to him. I wouldn't put it on a university application. It definitely wouldn't get me a job.
But the good news is that I wouldn't get you a job, but you are sort of displaying yourself as a consummate broadcaster, which is good.
A consummate
broadcaster.
Do you know what that means?
Well, what it means is you're a good professional broadcaster.
I'm not sure you know what consummate means entirely.
Yes, no, it's one of those words that doesn't mean anything much, but they always put it together with professional. They always say a consummate professional. You can't say the word professional without saying consummate.
I've definitely said the word professional without consummate.
Well, you in future, consummate.
Okay, always.
It's like if somebody is an experienced goal scorer in football, they always take their chances with aplomb. Aplomb is one of these words you never use in any other context apart from somebody scoring a goal. It's always scored with aplomb. But the good news, Ruth, is that those people who do like you tend to communicate by email, and we have quite a lot of emails.
Like normal people.
Well, you say that.
I'm going to get such hate. I don't want to get more hate mail. Please don't send it.
Well, this is we've talked about Love Island.
It's true.
This is the other side of celebrity. You're getting a tiny, tiny, tiny little taste of it.
Well, no, you think, like, what must it be like for people who have been on Love Island however to receive...
Don't look at Twitter. I mean, if I...
How would you not like that? Because of the way that celebrity works now, that is their entire career is being, after Love Island, is being a social media like presence or whatever. How do you not? And especially if you, so like YouTubers, like they build their career from being online, and then I've seen people talk about how damaging it is to be online all the time, but then that's your, in a way, that's your job.
That's your job.
And also, if you put so much of yourself.
If you can look at it as a job.
But how do you separate the... Because these YouTubers, they build their brand. Their brand is themselves and is their personality. How do you separate the personal from the professional like that when that's how you've become popular, is by being relatable?
Yeah, well, we're building your brand here, Ruth. And the people who like you, David Sharratt, for instance, has headed his email, Love Mail. This is not hate mail, this is Love Mail. Superb and fascinating output, he says. Hate mail a sad inevitability. Entertaining nonetheless, he's enjoying it. More from the thesaurus, please. Well, we can add haughty to hoity-toity, because that's another meaning of supercilious, is haughty. So you're both haughty and hoity-toity.
I like hoity-toity.
Which sounds good, doesn't it?
It almost sounds like a term of affection.
Yeah. He says, the sad thing is that this kind of vitriol can be found...
Vitriol, don't know what that means either.
Well, just sort of hate.
Yeah.
Abuse, really. This kind of vitriol can be found in so many Facebook or YouTube comment sections.
Mm.
It's something we just tolerate. Just as Joseph de Maistre said, I've no idea who Joseph de Maistre is. Every
like
nation...
A philosopher or something?
Yeah, it'd be something like that. Every nation gets the government it deserves. Do we similarly get the internet we deserve? And he says, misogynist poker, I see your Winkleman and raise you felts. Now, you probably don't know what I'm talking about here. But you remember last week I said I was off. I sometimes think of sending a hate mail to Claudia Winkleman, who, for some unknown reason, it irritates me intensely, especially on the shampoo advert. Well, he's obviously saying that. I agree with that, and adding Vanessa Feltz into the argument.
Vanessa Feltz, yeah.
Yeah, I've no objection to Vanessa Feltz, really. He says, Brexit aside, the bigger cliff edge is what will happen when Ruth goes to university. Any thoughts of continuing the podcast once Ruth has flown the nest? You haven't, but I have. So we'll see.
But, I mean, the thing is, though, you can't... If I say I don't want to do it, then just nothing cut, much. You just cut me out.
Yeah.
Find a new daughter. Well, the thing is, you have got two other daughters. Yeah,
yeah, so I could possibly.
He'll just rotate us in and out.
Well, there may be the odd one. Put it this way.
Maybe a
Christmas special.
Monthly, Easter.
Easter special.
Isn't it like International Happiness Day today?
Is it really?
I think so, yeah.
International something.
Yeah, well, there you go, so be happy.
I'm happy. Now this is interesting, because on a previous podcast, you mentioned that smoking looked cool in movies, you know, when you see it in movies, and on album covers, you know, you get album covers.
Alex Turner
of the Arctic Monkeys. I agree, he says it does, you know, on album covers in film. Mm-hmm. However, can you help me understand e-cigs? I just don't get how the white, sickly, sweet plume can make anybody look charismatic.
No,
and it's true.
Can't help you.
No, that doesn't. And as you said before, I think on a previous podcast, you know, you're standing behind someone who's vaping and you think, you think
strawberry like nice shortcake.
Strawberry shortcake or ice cream or something, and it's not.
I don't think it looks cool.
Yeah. Lawrence Wilson also loves you. He's listening. He's slowly catching up. He caught on very late, so he's got 50-odd to catch up on.
Why? You see, I don't bother with stuff when it's been on for so long. Yeah.
Well, Lawrence Wilson, thank Lawrence Wilson for that. And Nick Storr sends us an email. He's been listening to me for 100 years. And has taken you to task when you, apparently in one podcast, last week's podcast, you said to me, can you imagine being a celebrity? Well, in Nick Storr's, you said that to me.
Yeah.
What it'd be like being a celebrity. We must have been talking about...
About hate mail, probably,
Yeah.
And, which is the general theme, apparently.
And in Nick Storr's eyes, I am a celebrity.
Yeah.
He says,
I mean,
does she not know that her father is a celebrity? I mean, once a semi-regular panellist on a long-forgotten daytime TV game show.
What?
I was on a show called... Brainwave. It was called Brainwave. And it was a daytime TV show.
Wow, it must have been really... It's really had good lasting power as well.
Oh, incredible. It's all over YouTube. Actually, I'm on YouTube introducing a breakdancing contest, so imagine that. But anyway, yeah, thank you for all that, Nick Storr. Once of Sheffield, he said, so he's listening to me, obviously, on North of England. Now of Chattanooga, North Georgia, USA.
Wow.
And James...
I wonder what's over there.
James, yeah, well, he loves it in Chattanooga. He's actually been in touch with me before. But James in Cheshire says, I'm looking forward to hearing another supercilious whining lecture this coming weekend. And I also hope that Ruthie will repeat her wonderful impression of the actor Robert Newton.
Robert, I don't get that.
Well.
It's gone way over my head.
Yeah, well, it would do, because Robert Newton was a film star in, like, the 40s and 50s. But he did the original...
Pirate?
When anybody does a pirate voice, they're actually doing Robert Newton, the actor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, weren't the original people who did the pirate voice pirates?
No, you think the actual pirates were probably, you know, criminals and things.
Yeah.
They weren't. Yes.
But that's why they have that.
They weren't the lovable characters going around saying, ha, Jim lad. They would, you know, they would run people through with their cutlasses and steal all
the
stuff.
Yeah, and then say R at the end.
Would they say R at the end?
Yeah.
And how would they say it?
No, I'm not doing it.
You're not doing it?
No.
So, but he said he also remembers you when you were about 4 doing your hilarious impression of my hilarious impression of Dick Van Dyke doing his absurd Cockney accent in the original 1960s film of Mary Poppins. And when you used to do that on one of the other podcasts, I think. Yeah, when you were tiny. If you do want to email us... with anything, it does seem the hate mail is coming through the post. The email is
which
more,
is quite weird, really.
Is more supportive. So if you want to email us, supportive or not, or suggest a couple of people there have suggested tunes, and I'll take that up. But if you do want to email us, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. That address again for the hard of hearing, martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. Take a short break, and then we'll listen to some music.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Start with me this week, shall we? There's an album come out called John Savage's 1968. And John Savage is a bit of a music journo, and he puts together compilations of music that was happening in various years through the 60s. He specialises in the 60s. And in 68, you had this weird sort of period. He calls it 68 when the world was burning, because you had the riots in Paris, you had race riots in the States, and you had campus violence in the States and all that. We were moving from the sort of innocent yeah pop Beatles type era into a sort of psychedelic era, and this is the first edition, they're called.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag within. I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Well, that's called Just Dropped In to See What Condition My Condition Was In, and was done by the First Edition. So it's a sort of typical 60s counterculture, these sort of counterculture song. And it had all those lyrics like, you know, I found my mind in a paper bag, I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. It's all very trippy type lyrics, but still, yeah, but still a bit of a pop song in many ways. It was a hit in the States, and it was the First Edition, who, interestingly enough, one of the performers in the First Edition was Kenny Rogers. Have you heard of Kenny Rogers?
Yeah, I've heard of Kenny Rogers.
Kenny and Dolly?
Yeah.
So not psychedelic.
No, I was going to say.
But that's how he started out. So what have you got? 81 years old, but still alive, by the way, Kenny Rogers. 81 years old, married 5 times.
Wow, that's a lot of times.
Yes.
Can you imagine being married 5 times?
5 times.
How could you possibly find 5 people you want to marry?
Well, Kenny Rogers, mate. He's a country music star, so that explains it. Very country music. He's got an estate in Colbert in Georgia, and on his estate, Rogers keeps a pet goat named Smitty. Having originally acquired the animal from a friend in 2008, according to Rogers, the goat has been his centre, providing a calming influence after long and stressful touring schedules.
So I've back to my UK hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a song called Chances by Subculture Surge.
Chances are you think that I'm in love with you.
Why do we do this to ourselves? We do this over and over and over and over. Rhymes and round we go, rhymes and round we go. Ah, we'll just go on by itself.
Well, now, that's strange. I did play...
You must like that, though.
I do. I played double the... because I thought, I'm playing two things there. I'm playing Chances Are by Johnny Mathis, which was one that I used to play on...
See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Chances Are by Johnny Mathis is what...
The, like, jazz...
That's been sampled in there. A sort of crooning thing from late 50s, early 60s, which I used to play on Radio 2, the actual song.
Did you actually?
Yeah, yeah, in the 80s. 30 years ago, and then he goes into it. It's very, very clever, because
yeah, it's cool,
isn't it? You didn't even know he sampled it.
No,
did
I didn't. I assumed it must have been sampled from, well, I thought that maybe, because it has a sample-y sound, but I wasn't sure.
Mm.
But I didn't know it had.
Yeah,
no, so
well, tell me all about Subculture. What
Subculture
called?
Surge.
Subculture
it's
Surge.
The brainchild of producer Subculture Sounds and lyricist Hype Man Surge. Spent their pocket money on Mos Def Records and stuff, but there's not much about them. They don't have like a Wikipedia page, they don't have an about on Spotify, so it is difficult to find the stuff about them. But they're kind of in the same scene as people like Loyal Kana and stuff, like
right.
That kind of jazz hip hop fusion type thing, but they're so cool.
That's so cool. Well, you know, obviously I enjoyed that because it was, when I first put it on, it goes into the whole bit from Chances Are.
Yeah, it's quite
Johnny
it's quite a long time.
Do you not recognise the voice of Johnny Mathis?
No. Nope.
Yeah, he's Mr. Smooth. That was great. Very, very good.
Thank you.
Speaking of which, Laurel Carner is on at Glastonbury. We were discussing Glastonbury.
On the bus.
On the bus. A couple of newspapers are saying it's a very disappointing lineup, but you take a...
I thought it was great.
It sounded like a decent lineup to me.
Well, I mean... Stormzy was one of the on the top line. It was like Stormzy, Kylie, The Cure, Killers,
yeah.
Miley Cyrus, who I love. Miley Cyrus, like I think she's brilliant. Bugsy Malone was there. The Streets were there.
Mm.
They're great.
Yeah, so
yeah, I didn't think it looked disappointing, but I think that's a lot of people have said that,
yeah.
Haven't they?
Well, do you think it's just the thing about Glastonbury is it seems to be for the middle aged more than for
I think
for
it's
you.
Just for people who are a little bit older, just because it's. Bit more expensive.
So people who are disappointed with it would have preferred, say, a big act like Led Zeppelin. Or,
yeah, like the Stones, like you were saying,
or the
I
Rolling
guess.
Stones, yeah.
So should we talk about Venezuela?
Let's talk about Venezuela.
1 million Venezuelan refugees have gone from Venezuela to Colombia, and Colombia have very much like opened their doors quite freely and been... Unlike all the other countries who have put like further restrictions, like all the other South American countries and America, obviously, who have put further restrictions on Venezuelan refugees, Colombia have just completely been like, come over here, because it used to be all one thing.
Mm.
Panama, Peru, Venezuela and Colombia, I think. Maybe not Peru, but those four countries. It used to be all one thing, so there's quite a lot of like shared heritage and stuff. But Venezuela, people are starving to death.
They're starving
and
to death.
And there's... Yeah. Because of the terrible Prime Minister Nicolas
Maduro,
there's like really bad inflation basically, and so the money's just worth nothing. There's one of the stories is of an artist, not even an artist, just like a guy trying to make a business or whatever, and because the money's worth so little, people just leave money around because it's not.
There's no point
carrying it. And he's taken lots of the Venezuelan notes, which are really bright colours, and made them into bags and purses and art and like fashion art and whatever. Because the money's worth so little, so I think that really illustrates like how bad it is and stuff. But also, there was a guy did a kind of like a documentary series thing, and I watched that, and he went to Colombia and they were serving like big like hot dogs basically, and he was saying how much would this cost in Venezuela, and they were like, oh, this would maybe be like 2 months' salary or something.
Yeah,
just
ridiculous.
You can't afford to eat basically, so going to Colombia. But my main thing was obviously this is terrible, but what I think is more interesting is that I hadn't heard of this until I saw this video, and I genuinely had not heard that there was such like poverty in Venezuela. And you said there's been a lot of it in like...
We've done it on my show on Talk Radio every week for the last...
Which obviously I listen to.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about Venezuela because it was supposed to be a socialist paradise.
Yeah.
Hugo Chavez, who was the predecessor of Nicolas Maduro, came in. Lots of support from people like Jeremy Corbyn. Lots of support from socialists all over the place because that was going to, you know, this was going to... cut out America from it. And you will hear people that argue that the problems of Venezuela are all down to the USA because the USA doesn't like the socialist government in Venezuela.
Yeah,
they have somehow caused this. I think it's more likely caused by the absolute incredible corruption of Maduro and before him Chavez. And also the fact that, you know, which... Is that endemic in socialist states?
Does socialism have to be...
But I just hate
the idea that socialism has to end up with immense poverty for the many and wealth for the few.
Yeah.
Like, I hate that that
You've actually
what it...
reversed Corbyn's slogan there. Poverty for the many, incredible wealth for the few. It's always ended up like that
in Russia and Cuba and all these places who have actually had socialist states. I hate the idea that that is just humanity's instinct, is just greed. And that's how it's going to end up. Somehow in the media that I come across, just not heard about Venezuela, because I think they're too busy bothering about Brexit.
Well, I think our home news programmes are, but I think if you get your news off the internet, as most people do these days...
I've not heard about loads of it on the internet.
Well, are you looking at the YouTubers selling toxic tea or whatever it is?
Detox tea. No, I don't follow any of those because I think it's genuine. I think there should be laws against selling them. It's like terrible and it literally gives people eating disorders.
Oh, a detox tea?
Yeah, so there's these YouTubers and they show a picture of themselves and they're like, this is what I've got from drinking my detox teas or whatever. And it's not, it's what you've got from having no job so you can keep an impossible fitness regime.
So I think your argument here is that we all should know more about Venezuela because it is horrendous what's going on there.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
And it was a little bit like the Muslim people in Chinese internment camps. How is that not bigger news? Like, I know it is in, like, newspapers and stuff, but that should be the leading story of every single news broadcast.
Yes.
It should.
Well, the leading story at the moment...
Millions of people in literal concentration camps. Mm. How is that not the leading item of every news thing?
Well, one argument would be that, you know, we all need to do a lot of trade with China, so we maybe give China an easy time in that respect. I mean, there are organisations like Amnesty and everything which keep an eye on these sort of things and try and get them to the top of the news agenda, but it's difficult. Mm-hmm. But also, at the top of the news agenda now should be the floods in Malawi and Mozambique.
Oh, yeah.
Millions of people, hundreds of thousands of people possibly dying through those and whole areas. Yeah. And you always think how small an issue Brexit is compared, in world terms, no one's dying over Brexit. But we always have. I know people who listen to the BBC World Service all the time simply because they reckon that's the only way they can find out what's happening in the world.
Mm.
Well, you'll be thrilled to hear, Ruth, yet another book about teenagers is out. Inventing Ourselves, The Secret Life of the Teenage Brain by Sarah Jane Blakemore.
It's not a secret, literally just ask.
Moody, lazy, selfish... Three of the Spice Girls that never quite made it. Moody, Lazy, Selfish, Secrets of the Teenage Brain Explained is the headline on this review. And it talks initially about teenagers slamming doors, etc., mm-hmm. and getting very embarrassed about things. The advantage of this book is that she is a professor in cognitive neuroscience at University College London. So she does. It's actually about the human brain.
Yeah.
She says the human brain carries on changing substantially through our teens and into our 20s and even 30s. She talks about sleep and circadian rhythms. Apparently, in your teenage.
What is a circadian rhythm? I hear people say it all the time.
Well, apparently, I think it's just the rhythm of life.
But what does circadian mean? Isn't it one of those words, though, that people use a lot, and I've never known what it means, really?
I think circadian rhythms, it's a bit like consummate professional.
Google,
I think circadian rhythms, was about
I tell you what, I did not spell it right. I spelled it S-C-A-D-I-A-N. It's actually spelled C-E-I...
No,
C-I-R-C-A-D-I-A-N, right. like circle waves. Yes. I guess that's from the same word, probably.
Yes, it will be.
A circadian rhythm is any biological process that displays an endogenous, intrainable oscillation of about 24 hours. Also, anything that works in a 24-hour rhythm.
Yeah. You're,
good.
Apparently, during your teenage years, your circadian rhythms change, affecting your sleep patterns.
Right, yeah, that makes sense, because you need more sleep when you're a teenager than you even do when you're a child, don't you?
Yes, that's right. Adolescence involves developing a self-identity, particularly a social one. So the areas of the brain involved in social cognition, social understanding, and peer influence are all undergoing huge amounts of change. So
I think that's really just about, like, you becoming your own person. Like, you're not just becoming a smaller version of your parents or whatever. And I think that one of the things is that you just need to give teenagers enough space to decide who they want to be and who they want to be friends with and how they want to act. I might say, this might be stupid because I don't have children, but sometimes I think people say that it must be really hard to raise, like, teenagers and stuff. But actually, surely it's quite easy because you just give them... room?
Well, it depends on how their circadian rhythms are moving, and it also depends on, you know, what they're like.
Yeah.
Is that a personality thing
or like a nurture thing? Like, do you think that teenagers who really act out because their parents were bad parents when they were a child, or just because that's their nature.
Before puberty, it's normal for children to get up at 6 a.m. and be really energetic. And then suddenly, as teenagers, they can't go to sleep until later than their parents. It's partly a natural shift in their biology. Teenage brains start producing melatonin, the hormone that induces sleep in humans, about 2 hours later in the evening.
Really?
So, yeah, apparently.
I had no idea. See, I've never had a problem. Like, I go to sleep at 11 every night.
Yeah. The one thing we know is really important for development is getting a sufficient amount of good quality sleep.
Well, then you shouldn't start school so early.
Sleep is the thing we know is really important, not just for brain development and learning, but for mental health. And a lot of people said that absolutely what you just said, that you shouldn't start school so early. But
well, it would be impossible. Like, I have to. The latest I could get up, really, is like 6:45. What do they want me to do? Go to sleep at like 8?
No, you're absolutely right. Well, not take your phone to bed with you is probably one thing in terms of
sleep quality. I get to sleep for like 11. Like, I'm asleep for like 11 on school nights and stuff. So I can't really go, you know, I can't go to sleep much earlier than that.
No. Well, you go to sleep at 10, I suppose.
Yeah, no, but I wouldn't be able to get to sleep.
No, fair enough. Have you got a meme of the week for us, Ruth?
I do indeed. It's a Brexit meme.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, Brexit analogy. We've all been on a night out with a mate who says, it's crap here, let's go somewhere else. Then when you leave, you realise he has no idea where to go, and the place you left won't let you back in. The UK is standing in a kebab shop at 2 a.m. arguing about whose fault it is.
That's very good.
That is very good, isn't it? If you want to get in touch with us over email, the address is martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to listen to the songs in full, then you can go over to our Spotify playlist and search for Ruthie, Me and My Dad, or just Martin and Ruth, and you can find those two songs in full and all the others from all the other weeks we've been doing the song.
Almost all the other weeks we've been doing the songs.
It's like one song I forgot, and now I can't remember what it is.
It's all to do with
It's
your circadian rhythms. So, martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com, and the Spotify, just go to Martin and Ruth and more or less do it, won't it?
Spotify, you can just search Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, Me and My Dad.
And we won't see you next week because you're on French Exchange.
I forgot, no.
French Exchange.
We'll see you
in about a fortnight, I suspect.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.